following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the R&R Podcast Network. Welcome to RTW Rewind. Red Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Red Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. I'm your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. I hope everybody is doing well all around the world. Thank you for joining me on this episode. As we learned this past weekend, if you've been following the Chronicles of the Undertaker, Mark Calloway, on the WWE Network, his five-part series entitled The Last Ride, it is an unprecedented journey into the last few years of Mark Calloway's life and really unfettered access into a man that we really knew nothing about, a man who we've seen, you know, come up through the ranks, whether it be his early years when he first started as Kane the Undertaker or Mean Mark Callis in WCW, or The Undertaker that we've known for the last 30 years, almost 30 years. It'll be 30 years in November. His amazing run in the WWE. He had mentioned on part five, titled The Revelation, that was just released, that he is done for all intents and purposes. He's going to ride off into the sunset. And the Boneyard match at WrestleMania is his last match. Again, wrestling is wrestling. We'll believe it when we see it, right? You know, not everybody stays retired. Ric Flair, Terry Funk, Shawn Michaels, a host of others, Mick Foley. But, you know, if that was indeed his last match, what a better way to leave, right? So I just want to kind of do a tribute to Mark Calloway, The Undertaker, and give you my history of watching him over the years and give you a little bit of perspective of what he meant to me. And that's what the show is really all about. So the first time I actually remember seeing Mark Calloway in the ring was in WCW. At Clash of the Champions 10, where he, Mark had replaced Sid Vicious in the Skyscrapers. He teamed up with Dangerous Dan Spivey. And I remember them beating down the Road Warriors after their match. And then at Wrestle War 90, I remember Spivey had left. And there was a masked guy, which I later learned was Mike Enos from the AWA, also in the WWF and the Beverly Brothers. But he's part of the Destruction Crew in the AWA. And they lost. It was a Chicago street fight, which obviously the Road Warriors from Chicago. No way the Road Warriors are going to lose the Chicago street fight. Come on. But yeah, then Mean Mark took on Paulie Dangerously as his manager. Remember him wrestling Johnny Ace at the Capital Combat, I believe, the RoboCop pay-per-view. And then Flying Brian at a Clash after that. And the last match I remember seeing him in WCW was against Lex Luger for the U.S. title at the Great American Bash 90. In Baltimore, and I remember Pauly cut a fantastic impassioned promo before that match, and the match was pretty good. Even though Mean Mark lost to Luger, he really made the most out of that match that he could. And one thing that was really impressive about Mean Mark was the heat-seeking missile. Almost like old school, where he walks the ropes. But his finisher used to be the hard punch and the heat-seeking missile, where he'd stand up on the top rope. He would literally walk the top rope to the mid, if not, you know, most of the way, or even to the middle of the top rope, and jump off and land an elbow drop. For a guy that big, 6'9", 6'10", 300-some pounds, to be that agile, to balance himself and walk that top rope and drop an elbow, I mean, it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. I was blown away by him. He actually used that same move as The Undertaker. I don't know if he did it on TV, but I know he did it at a house show that I went to in Hartford, and I was pretty close. I was like 4 or 5 rows back, and he used that move when he first got into the WWF in late 90. That might have been early 91 when I saw him. I can't remember the exact time.
RTW Rewind.
I remember exactly where I was when The Undertaker debuted at Survivor Series 1990 in Hartford, Connecticut. Unfortunately, I was not there. I was with my dad at his girlfriend's house with her kids in Connecticut, and we watched it on pay-per-view. I'm so jealous that my best friend Warren, that I mentioned, obviously, on the previous shows, he was there. Still has his ticket stub, by the way, to this day. If I could ever get that ticket stub to, or if he could ever find it. I tried to get it from him in case I ever met Mark and could have him sign it for him, but he couldn't find it. But yeah, he was there when Taker made his debut with Bruce Pritchard as Brother Love as his manager. To be the mystery opponent against for Ted DiBiase's $1 million team against Dusty Rhodes' team. I wish I was there. The coolest thing I could do for my best friend, since he went to Taker's first appearance at Survivor Series in 1990, was take him to Atlanta when Survivor Series came to the Phillips Arena. 2015. They had the 25 years of destruction at Survivor Series that year, honoring his run. And he teamed up with Kane to take on the Wyatt family, Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper. That was very surreal to him, and I knew that meant a lot to him, you know, that he could go to the first. And then, you know, 25 years later, get to see Taker. It would have been, you know, his last appearance at Survivor Series. So it had come full circle. I mean, he got to see Taker's first appearance at Survivor Series in 1990 and would ultimately be his last appearance 25 years later. And Taker had not been at a Survivor Series since. So that's just a cool thing I could do, you know, for my best friend. Yeah, and I know that meant a lot to him. But going back to the first appearance, you know, when I ever saw him in WWF as The Undertaker, I was like, wow, that's Mean Mark. I mean, by then I knew wrestling was a work, but I was still amazed by the character. He was creepy, man. He was scary. He scared a lot of kids. At that time, I was 14. So, it, you know, if I was, say, 9 or 10, it would have been a different story. But he was... he would scare the crap out of kids and run referees off. Like, the coolest thing is when he's beating on somebody in the corner, and the referee tries to pull him off, and he just turns his head and stares at him, and the referee would just run out of the way, would run out of the ring. Like, that was just such good stuff, man. The early incarnation of that character was mesmerizing. You know, he was almost like a zombie, but he was just ghostly, man. so good. And, you know, it didn't take long for him to get into the main event picture. I mean, Undertaker to face Hulk Hogan after a year is amazing. A year later, it's Survivor Series 91 with the help of Ric Flair. Let's be honest. Flair had something to do with it. Taker tombstoned Hulk Hogan onto the steel chair that Ric Flair threw into the ring. And the referee didn't see it and became the WWF champion for the first time. 1 year after he debuted, he beat the amazing immortal Hulk Hogan, who rarely ever lost clean to anybody. But, of course, there was a controversial ending. The reign did not last that long. It was like 4 days later, or 6 days later, Tuesday in Texas, an impromptu pay-per-view. it was, according to Bruce Pritchard, a test to see how a pay-per-view would fare on Tuesday. I don't know if I buy that shit. But he lost the title back to Hogan because Hogan grabbed the urn and opened it up and threw whatever was in there in Taker's face. Blinded him with the ashes and took his title back. And that's when Jack Tunney said, even though the referee's decision is final, he is vacating the title and it will be awarded to the winner of the 1992 Royal Rumble match. And obviously, which Ric Flair won that one, one of the greatest Rumble matches of all time. Didn't take long for the fans to kind of get behind Taker. I mean, even though he was a bad guy, people loved him, man. People dug it. So in early 92, the Undertaker's ally, Jake the Snake Roberts, who he had kind of teamed up with to harass the Macho Man and Elizabeth, Jake turned on Taker on the funeral parlor, locked his hand into a casket, beat him down with a steel chair, and Taker wouldn't give up. Literally dragged the coffin behind him to chase Jake. That was so, so cool. I will never, ever forget that. I mean, that was just really good stuff. And over the years, Taker did so many cool little stuff like that and vignettes, and he always got the special treatment. Like, it's literally the greatest character that Vince McMahon ever created. Nobody else would have been able to pull off that character. Except for Mark Calaway. And putting Percy Pringle, Paul Bearer with him was so funny, because Paul was actually a real-life mortician. And then played that character, amped up by a million on TV with a white, you know, painting his face white, you know, having a high pitched voice and carrying the urn around. Oh, yes. The presentations, those two, were just fantastic. He made his debut at WrestleMania 7. Defeating Superfly Jimmy Snuka in, like, I don't know, 3-4 minutes. And went on an unprecedented run at WrestleMania. Obviously 21-0 until he got beat by Brock Lesnar, which we'll get into here in a second. But he had a match with Jake at WrestleMania 8 at the Hoosier Dome. Wasn't fantastic. Well, he did recover from several DDTs, only to tombstone Jake outside the ring onto the pavement, roll him in the ring, get the pin. That was the last time we saw Jake in the WWF for quite some time. Went to WCW after that, had a horrible run there. Came back in 93, I believe. But the original character had to evolve. As he became a babyface, little tweaks like changing up his music a little bit. And Jim Johnston, let me tell you, of all the great things that he created over the years as far as theme songs, the Undertaker work he did was the best stuff that he ever accomplished. The many, many different incarnations of that song that Jim Johnston wrote was just tremendous. He's a musical genius. And like I said, the presentation of Undertaker was second to none. But just little tweaks like changing his music and changing his gloves and his hat. Like, he had a set of gray gloves that he wore and had a hat with a gray band around it. And just changed that to purple. Purple gloves and a purple band around the hat. And boom, babyface Undertaker. And even through, you know, various parts of his career, even when he went into the ministry, I believe, you know, he still kind of maintained the purple stuff. But once he turned babyface, man, people really, really got behind him. And with a character like that, it's so difficult to beat him. So, like, anybody that had to defeat him, it had to be like, you know, a gang attack. You know, like 15 different people trying to put him in a casket when he went against Yokozuna. And then all of a sudden he rises up to the ceiling. Like, he died and his spirit just rose up. They cut like a little in-casket promo of saying that he will be back, and somehow rose him up to the top of the arena. With lightning bolts and all kinds of stuff. I mean, the stuff they did with him was just, it's fantastic. Completely ridiculous and over the top, but still fantastic. Very few people have gotten the Undertaker treatment. And he earned it because he was a hell of a guy. He's an amazing guy and had the respect of everybody in the locker room to this day. Never, ever heard anybody talk poorly about Mark Calloway. I could go over his entire career. I mean, we don't need to get into every single match and all that and every single thing I saw. Like, there's just so many cool moments. I personally got to see him wrestle many, many times. Most notably, WrestleMania 14 in Boston, when he took on Kane for the first time, and both their entrances were just ridiculous. Like, Taker had the Druids coming down with big, like, fire torches that they held them up together, and Taker walked through them. Saw him at WrestleMania 27 in Atlanta, where he took on Triple H in their first of two matches, their first of back-to-back matches. That was a hell of a match. Both of them were great. But so many cool things over the years. Seeing him in Hartford when he kidnapped Stephanie McMahon and was going to marry her and had her tied to a symbol, and Steve Austin came out to save her. I was there for that. Many, many matches I saw. I saw him in a Hell in a Cell match against Randy Orton. Let's see, where else did I see him at? Oh, I saw him take on John Cena in Worcester. John Cena was in doing the Word Life thing. He was still a heel. That was the same pay-per-view that Rock fought Goldberg. I think it was Backlash, maybe 2003-ish, somewhere around there. And various other Raws and pay-per-views, Summer Slams and stuff like that. I've seen Taker. Been fortunate enough to see him many, many times.
RTW Rewind.
One of the things that really made me respect him the most was a house show that he went to in Worcester. And it wasn't at the Worcester Centrum, but it was next door. And I think they call it like the DCU Arena or something like that. It was like a bingo hall. Like, it was a small convention hall kind of thing. Very, very small, very intimate. Couldn't have been more than 300-400 people there. It's a very odd location. I don't know why they didn't have it next door. Maybe they couldn't sell tickets at that time. JBL was the WWF champion on SmackDown at that time, if that gives you a time period. So early 2000s, early mid-2000s. Taker kind of slowed down a little bit and wasn't doing a lot of shows at that point due to injuries, but he was here at this house show in front of 300-400 people. I'm like, wow. This guy who's done so much for the business, winding down at the tail end of his, at that point, what we thought was the tail end of his career, and he went another 10, 15, but hey, was making limited dates. And he wrestled that very small venue for us. That's really when my respect level for him, Mark Calloway, went through the roof. But I actually got to meet him on two occasions. I got to meet him in early 1991 at a house show. I had the pleasure of meeting The Undertaker twice at various points in my life. First time I met him, I was 13 years old. It was early 1991. I don't remember the month, but there was a house show coming to the Hartford Civic Center. And as I mentioned in other shows, I was a junior bowler. We would bowl at Bradley Bowl across the street from Bradley International Airport, BDL. This was a Saturday. I believe the event was either that afternoon or that night. I didn't go to the actual event. But when we were done bowling around lunchtime, we went next door to a local New England franchise called Papagino's. It's a pizza place. And they were all throughout New England. The same people owned a sub chain called D'Angelo's. So we went to Papagino's. And the first person we ran into that was over there was Jimmy Hart. A friend of mine was over there first and said, you got to go over there. It's a bunch of wrestlers going over there. This person said that she bumped into Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who said, like, his chest is, like, out to here, and he's, like, huge. When we walked over, it was right next door. We walked over to Papagino's, and we saw Hacksaw was sitting in his car with the door open. I was like, holy crap. We go inside, and Jimmy Hart, the Mouth of the South, was up there ordering, getting his food. And this is back in 91, sorry. I was 14, almost 15, sorry. I was 5'7", 5'8", at that point. I hadn't fully grown out to the 6'2", that I am now. And Jimmy Hart seemed larger than life. Like, he seemed a lot taller than us. Come to find out later on, I don't know how tall he is now or was then, but we were looking up to him. And he's a super nice guy. Like, hey guys, how you doing? And he was a heel, but super, super nice guy. Wasn't in character, wasn't in kayfabe at all. We shook his hand and all that. Like, we didn't care. Like, even as kids, we loved wrestlers, man. Like, I don't know, maybe it's just us. You know, maybe we're the original Smart fans. I don't know. We never got really caught up in who's a good guy, who's a bad guy. You know what I mean? We just want to meet the people we saw on TV. Who doesn't, right? They're celebrities. Then Hacksaw walks in with the Nasty Boys and The Undertaker. I mean, what a crew. Jimmy Hart left. I don't think he was riding with them, but he left. Brian Knobbs takes the microphone that they have there because whenever your order was ready, they'd call you over the microphone, like order number 53 or whatever. Brian Knobbs from the Nasty Boys grabs the microphone and says, Hacksaw Duggan's here! Hacksaw Duggan's in the house! Just making a scene. And they were heels, and Hacksaw was a face. Like, it was just so funny. And Taker had this Ribera jacket on. His Ribera Steakhouse jacket, which was from, it's famous steakhouse in Japan that all of the wrestlers ate at. Like, if you were in there and you didn't have a Ribera jacket, you weren't cool, man. And I don't know when he did a tour over there, but he had his jacket. It's like a satin jacket, cheesy 80s jacket, whatever. But, you know, that's one thing that I remember. Had his hair in a ponytail. Slicked back. Not sure what he ordered. Like a tuna sub maybe or something. I don't know. Irregardless. He sat down with the Nasty Boys and Hacksaw sat down like four or five tables down on the other side by himself because, well, you know, kayfabe. So my friends are like, I dare you to go up to them. I dare you to go up to them. Because they were kind of scared by Undertaker. And I was a little bit intimidated. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm not going to lie. I know I said earlier, you know, I knew it was Mark Callis and all that, but like, they did such a great job with that character. He was intimidating, to say the least. So I went up to him. Just, I think I had a napkin and a pen or a piece of, I had a paper, piece of paper I brought over from the bowling alley. And I said, Mr. Undertaker, sir, would you mind signing this for me, please? And he sat there. And I mean, I'll never, ever forget this as long as I live. Well, maybe when I get older, I'll forget shit, but I'm 44 now. And this is, you know, 29 years ago. He stopped for a minute and paused. Put down his sandwich. Grabbed the piece of paper and the pen and signed it. Rest in peace, The Undertaker. I wish I still had that autograph to this day. My dad's girlfriend, who I mentioned before, that we watched Survivor Series 90 at, which is so funny that they played a part in all this. When my dad broke up with her, they had taken it with them. They stole it. So what are you going to do? Don't have that autograph anymore. But I said, thank you. And he goes, just like, like he just kind of grunted, right? But while he was sitting there, like, contemplating if he was going to sign it or not, it felt like forever. It may have even been a few minutes. Brian Knobb, just being the funny guy that he is, says, hey, kid, you going to the show tonight? I'm like, yeah. And, fuck, I lied. I wasn't going to the show, but who cares? I said, yeah, I'm going to go. I'm like, you guys are fighting the Road Warriors or the Legion of Doom, right? He's like, yeah. Who do you think is going to win, kid? And I'm like, oh, you guys are going to kill him. He's like, ha-ha, I love this kid. This kid's all right. Hilarious. And I'm thinking in my mind, there's no fucking way you're going to beat the Legion of Doom. I don't think they did either, but I don't even know. I just thought that was funny, but Knobs was really cool. So Taker signs it. I didn't ask the Nasty Boys for their autograph, which is hilarious. And I go over to Hacksaw, I'm like, hey, Hacksaw, would you mind signing my autograph? He's like, sure, little buddy, I'll sign it for you. Like, I'll never forget that. Like, you're so over the top. But like, one of the nicest guys ever. I met Hacksaw many, many years later, when he did a comedy show with Jake Roberts at Zany's in Nashville. He did dual one-man shows. Jake would do his set, and then Hacksaw did his set after that. And I tell you, man, one of the nicest guys ever. Even still, like, unbelievably nice. We talked about stories about, you know, he's from Glens Falls, and I go up to Lake George, New York, or I used to go every summer. It's like, oh, man, I love that area, blah, blah, blah. So we bullshit for a while. Hacksaw was great then, you know. And he was great when I was a kid, and he was great later on. Never have a bad thing to say about Hacksaw. But he's like, sure, little buddy, I'll sign your autograph. So that was my day meeting those guys. So fast forward almost 30 years later, when Glenn Jacobs, Kane, his kayfabe brother, was running for mayor of Knox County in Tennessee, where I live a couple hours from now. He was having all kinds of events. He'd have them at the local Harley dealerships and all that, and, you know, different campaign stops. Well, he did two that were really, really noteworthy. One, he had Chris Jericho show up, and they did a live Talk is Jericho, which Jericho released a week or two later on his own podcast feed. That was really, really cool. But the last major one he did, he had Mark Calloway show up, The Undertaker, Taker never ever. This is before, like, he even signed at StarCast and got pulled out of it. Like, Taker never ever does autograph signings. They were very rare, even back in the day. You know, when he was full swing in his character in WWE. But Mark never ever does stuff like that, and he's a very shy person. You know, when he's not in front of the camera and all that. I had a friend meet him at a restaurant in Windsor Locks, Connecticut, around the same area, called the Skyline, and he was there having drinks. She was getting out of her car just as he was getting into his, and bumped into him. He's like, "Oh, sorry," all that, and you know, she tried to strike up a quick little conversation for him, and just said, "You know, this big, huge, hulking guy," and he was very sweet and very kind of awkward and shy. But yeah, Taker doesn't like doing a lot of stuff like that. So it was a very, very rare thing for him to come out for his you know, one of his best friends, Glenn Jacobs. Just shows you the respect that people have for Glenn Jacobs, by the way. That Taker would actually come and do an autograph signing, you know, for his camp, for Glenn's campaign. So I was like, I got to go. It's a few hours away. There's no way I'm missing that. No, absolutely no way I'm missing that. So I'm thinking, what can I get Undertaker to sign? And that's what I mentioned, the Survivor Series 90 ticket stub that Warren had, but Warren couldn't find it. So I'm like, all right, what can I have him sign, you know, just for my own personal collection? And I have tubs and tubs of magazines that I've carried out for the last 30 years, everywhere I've been, all around the country. And I go through the magazines. And I've been collecting since 1989. The Brother Love edition of the WWF magazine was the first one I ever bought in the store. Became a subscriber after that and used to receive them every month up until the late 90s. I stopped my subscription. But I ended up having the first cover that he was ever on of the WWF magazine. And somehow, and to this day, I have no idea how I had two copies. No, literally no idea. But I had a copy that I had that was opened that maybe I bought, I don't know, or somebody got for me, or maybe it was Warren's that he gave me. I don't know. But I also had an unopened copy still in the original plastic cellophane from the WWF with the old little, you know, mail sticker on it with my name and address on it that I got in the mail. These are, I forgot, late 91 or late 90, early 91, whenever he was on the cover. I don't remember the exact date. Still pristine, intact. And the only one I've ever had like that, that was closed. Like, that's how, like, weird this whole thing is. All the other magazines I received in the mail, they're all open up and read. For whatever reason, I never opened this one. It was still hermetically sealed from the publisher. I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding me. So I go to the event. I'm standing in line. My buddy Dylan from DDP Yoga was there. And I had him cut up in front of me in line, and we sat there and stood for forever. I mean, it was such a long line to go see Taker, as you would imagine. And I get up to the line after like an hour or two. And by then, like, you could tell Taker's, you know, they're both tired. They've been talking to a lot of people. So they just started really, like, shoot people through the line. Like, no more small talk. Let's go. Take a picture. Blah, blah, blah. Sign whatever and go. So I'm next in line behind Dylan. And the guy, whoever is in charge, like, just moving people through the line, says, I need you to open that. I'm like, dude, this thing's been sealed since 1991 or whatever. He's like, yeah, sorry, man. We gotta speed up things up. I need you to open it. So I wanted to open it right in front of Taker and be like, dude, look at this. This thing's never been opened since it first got mailed to me, you know, 30 years ago. But it's all right. I took it up to Taker. They put it in front of him. And he's like, wow, this is pristine. And they had me stand behind him and Glenn. We took our picture. And as he's signing, he's like, man, this is amazing. This is pristine. I'm like, I literally just opened it like a few seconds ago for the guy that's moving us through the line. Like, I received that as a kid, and for whatever reason, I never opened it until just now. He's like, that's amazing. And that was my interaction again for the second time. He said a little bit more to me than the first time, yeah. But I have that magazine. That's in my, I got to get it framed, but that's one of my prized things that that he signed. But he was amazed at how, you know, I said, it's the first cover you're ever on, man. I literally just opened it right now. He's like, that is so amazing. It's so pristine. That was cool. That was a cool moment. So, you know, I got to meet Taker in 91. And fast forward to, I don't remember what this was, 2018, 2019. To see him again from the beginning of his run and near the end of his run was just a really cool deal.
RTW Rewind.
It's amazing the run that Undertaker had, that Mark Calloway had. Being in the main event scene in the biggest company in the world for 30 years, to have the 21 in a row, you know, until he got defeated by Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, you'll probably never ever see that again. I mean, we were shocked when he lost, like everybody was. I watched it at home. My best friend Kevin was there. He's like, you wouldn't believe the crowd, man. Like, you could almost hear a pin drop. And the way Paul Heyman sold it was incredible. Nobody expected Taker to lose to Brock Lesnar and become 21-1. But that run that he had, man, 21 wins in a row. I know it's fake. I know it's kayfabe. I know it's a work. It's fixed. It's predetermined, whatever you want to call it. But the respect that Vince McMahon had for Mark Calloway to give him 21 wins in a row. And honestly, a lot of those matches were horrible in the beginning, but near the end, you'll hear the guys that are in the last match in the main event, or the people that had to follow him, that had to follow Mark, be like, we are put in the shittiest position in the world. Like Jericho and Triple H, we can't follow that. You got to follow, you're going to follow Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker 2 years in a row? No. It's no way, man. Amazing matches that he had, which very well should have been the main event. So much that streak became such a big deal, it even outshadowed the titles. Everyone was looking forward to seeing if this would be the year. And I don't know if people really expected Brock Lesnar to win. I think we all just assumed Taker's going to go undefeated at WrestleMania's entire career. But that's how much respect Taker has for Vince and has for Brock and has for the business, that Vince makes a decision. Taker said, fine, whatever, I'll do whatever you want, whatever's best for business. And that's, you know, that's something that Mark did to his own detriment over the years. When, you know, whenever he tried to get out, Vince pulled him back in. All the injuries that Mark had that he wrestled with, the bad hips and all the surgeries and coming back and wrestling and wrestling and wrestling. Wrestle once a year, you know, at one point. And it's still one of the best matches on the card. It's very, very hard to get your body in that condition to wrestle for one or two matches a year. Triple H said it's one of the hardest things he ever had to do. But whenever Vince needed Mark, Mark was there. Like I said, to his own detriment sometimes. Even to the point where Taker told a story, I think it was part four of the documentary series. I went to WrestleMania, Vince didn't even use me. But he's going to use me the next night for Raw, and I didn't have my gear. So he flew me back home to Texas to get my gear and get right back on the plane and come back. And he did it. You got to respect a guy like that, man, that loves the WWF, WWE, loves Vince McMahon, loves the business, and will do anything for him. We'll never ever have anybody else like Mark Calloway. And we'll never have a character like The Undertaker. That's such a long run. 30 years on top. Hogan never had that kind of run. Cena never had that kind of run. Flair never had that kind of run. Taker was main event almost from the very beginning. It's incredible. So if you really look at like who is the greatest wrestler of all time, you know, who's the greatest sports entertainer of all time? I know it's subjective, but after really just taking in his entire career and seeing all that he's done, never leaving Vince. Never went to Atlanta to go to WCW when everybody else left. Stuck with Vince the entire time. Finishing his career in WWE. For all intents and purposes. Can we put Mark Calloway, The Undertaker, is in the category of the greatest of all time? Give him the run that he had and what he meant to this business and how much respect that he carries from everybody? Certainly changed my mind a little bit. If not, he's top five. You know, yeah, you got to put Hogan, Cena, Rock, and Austin in there, and maybe Andre, Shawn Michaels, but like, there's a great case for The Undertaker to be in the greatest of all time. Certainly the greatest character we'll ever see. But Mark Calloway is a man. He's in that conversation of being the best ever. For his, not just for his longevity, but the impact that he had on the sport. It's truly remarkable. So I want to say thank you, Taker. Thank you, Mark Calloway, for everything that you've done for me as a wrestling fan and for all of us over the last 30 plus years. You're a remarkable character. You're a remarkable human being. And like I said, I've never heard anybody ever say one cross word to or about Mark Calloway. In a business that's pretty messed up and has a lot of horrible, disgusting, seedy people, as we've seen that are coming out now and we've seen over the years. Never once have I read a bad story about Mark Calloway. It's truly incredible. So many people have come and gone in this business. He may be the only man that universally everybody respects unequivocally. Thank you, Taker. Well, you probably may never hear this. If you do, or if somebody knows you that hears this, tell Mark I said thanks. That'll wrap it up for me for this episode of RTW Rewind. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at RadRobGaming. I'm a Twitch gaming streamer. Check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, streaming every Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Central, and every Sunday afternoon at 2 in the afternoon. And check out my YouTube gaming page. It is called RadRobGaming. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, we are at RadTurtlesPOD. You can send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. Leave us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. Check out our Pro Wrestling Tees store, prowrestlingtees.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. And please leave our company Twitter handle a follow. The R&R Podcast Network is on Twitter. It is at RR Pod Network on Twitter. And we appreciate all your support. I'll be back on Thursday for another edition of RTW Rewind. We're going to cover Shawn Michaels losing his smile. So tune in for that on Thursday. Until then, guys, I appreciate our support. Have a good couple of days. We'll see you right back here on Thursday. Take care.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod, and you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, exclusively here on the R&R Podcast Network.